microwaved coffee.
Okay.
So what is up?
I finished Queen's Gambit.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
Wasn't it
I
so
loved
good?
It.
It was.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to watch it.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Vanessa saw it though, right?
Yeah, Vanessa saw it.
Yeah. It's really. I'm sure you'll love it. It's a nice, like, I read an article saying that nowadays, and especially because we're in a pandemic, that everything is, you expect everything to be super depressing. So you watch a movie and you just expect the worst, like just like really sad or whatever.
Yeah.
And or TV shows, and it's like, that's what we expect good dramas to be or something like that, you know? And they were saying that this is just like a really good show. It's like competition, sports stuff also really kind of gets you like psyched up, and
yeah,
it's good. It's like a really good show. The cinematography is beautiful, and like the costumes and the set design, everything's just like really great.
Yeah, cool. a lot yeah, a lot better than I thought or than I was expecting, and I got like sucked into it instantly, and I was just like binge the whole season or the whole show.
I really like Anya Taylor-Joy. She's a great actress.
Yeah, she's really good. Yeah, when I saw her on
is that the main character?
Split.
Yeah, yeah, the main character.
Okay. Yeah, she's.
Oh
good.
Right, she was in Split.
Yeah, when I saw her in Split, I was like, she's gonna be good.
She was in a really good movie called Thoroughbreds.
Oh yeah.
And then the other actress, forgive me, but I don't know her name, was also amazing. Both of them were so good in that movie.
Let me see.
I don't know her name.
It's, what's his name's? Oh, no, I'm thinking of a different movie.
I was going to say, I'm like, I don't think I know her from anything else.
Olivia
I think
Cook? This is Olivia Cook. She was in Me and Earl and the
Dying Girl. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I've heard that one's really good.
Oh, yeah, she was also in Ready Player One.
Oh, mm-hmm. I haven't seen that one either.
Ready Player One. It's our future right there. Our future. That mixed with Wall-E.
With Wall-E.
Both of those together.
Yeah, I haven't really done much but play Cyberpunk.
That's good. It's a nice escape. Whatever keeps you home.
Yeah, but I might watch a few things once I'm done with this game. I think I'm going to just watch some TV.
You're doing all the side quests and stuff.
Oh my god, I haven't even finished the game yet. I've been playing for a lot of hours.
I think I'm halfway, but I have 30 hours in.
Oh, I have a lot more. I'm embarrassed to say how many.
You're in a safe place.
When Tarkov Wipe came in, I stopped playing for a while. Because I was like to play early on with everyone.
Yeah, no, I haven't stopped. Because there's so many quests, so I did all the side quests. And according to the game, I'm like 90% done for the main part of it, so I'm almost done with the game. But yeah, I've done almost all the side quests, and I have like over 100 hours.
Yeah, Kevin has 140 and he's on his second run through.
Yeah, see, he's because he doesn't complete it, right? Like he doesn't do all the side missions, or
he did all of them. He did everything.
I'm at 123.
Nice.
But I haven't completed it. But I've been taking my time too. Like I haven't skipped anything. I'm trying to get all the weapons too, and not just like the main parts of the story. But
yeah, it's a good thing to enjoy, you know. While quarantine's here, take it slow and don't beat it too fast. I definitely, some people beat it in 20 hours. Of course, not the side missions, but
yeah, then, I'm sure you can beat it.
Yeah,
quick.
But then I'm like why?
I mean, especially right now when you want something to do, you know.
Yeah, it's also really I thought it was really good. I know it's like a game that has gotten a lot of crap for all the bugs, but I haven't found like a lot of ones that are breaking the game. Like I've found a couple, but it's not crazy. Like the reason I stopped playing Grand Theft Auto is because every Grand Theft Auto besides every Grand Theft Auto after Vice City, I get to a point where I get stuck and I can't continue the game.
Oh yeah.
And like nobody complains about that stuff.
Yeah, that's but true. This game, I mean, like, that happened to really... Anthony on this game.
Yeah, like he couldn't continue.
He can continue no matter what he did, and then
even going back to a save, like an old save.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. He did everything he could possible, and then he said he found this one German guy on a thread that was like super deep, and then the guy was like, I had this happened, this is my situation, and then he like followed his exact instructions and went to the farthest corner of the map,
and it worked,
and then did something, and then came back, and he eventually got it fixed. Yeah.
What was the issue?
He just like he went to the next mission, it just wouldn't continue for him or something. Like nothing would pop up. Yeah. Yeah, there's been I haven't noticed too many game breaking bugs, but a lot of the people that have been playing it that I play games with regularly, they have, you know, they've fallen through the floor.
Yeah, I've fell through the floor once.
Yeah.
I've had weird things like, okay, so I found out like the car, it looks like a car throws up another car and it just launches it in the air. And it killed me. I got hit by the car. But it looks so funny because it's like it's a spawning bug.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which spawns, I kind of other. Yeah, like other I things. Can kind of get it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, basically it spawns a car on top of another car, and so they merge inside each other, and then one of them like tries to escape because you know the game's not supposed to do
things that. Two things can't be there.
Yeah. And it just launches it. It's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been good times. And then yeah, so after this I decided to basically I'm gonna watch stuff. I'm gonna go through that one, the
Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to watch all of Watchmen since
I need to watch really that. Yeah.
And then I'm gonna go through The Witcher.
Oh, the next is The Wire for me.
Oh my god, The Wire's so funny.
I should do The Wire
too. Dude, I'm so mad at myself that like my entire life it seems like people are like, that's the greatest show ever made and I never watched it.
Yeah, I should watch it.
I think when we started our podcast, probably our first couple episodes, you mentioned that. And then
yeah, you went through it, huh?
Yeah, and then I'm always like, oh yeah, I should watch that too, because no one says anything bad about it.
I've never heard anybody say that's a bad show. In fact, I've never heard anybody say it's an okay show. I've only heard it say the greatest show.
Yeah, that it's the greatest show ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to watch that. And then a lot of people, when I first started working at Apple, a lot of people recommended that to me.
I remember Chris. Oh my Raven? God. Yeah. He was like, that was like his favorite show.
Yeah,
and
he
always
was one of
taught
them.
Me. And the other show that I was kind of thinking about starting, because why not? We're locked inside, was Sopranos. I've never seen Sopranos either.
I started Sopranos. It is very good. Yeah. I didn't even finish it, but it was like one of those things where I'm like, I can't right now.
Yeah.
I can't right now, but I can already tell this is like, it's really good. Like just the first, I watched the first two episodes, but they're also, I think, an hour long. And I was just like, I can't do this. But yeah, the reason I want to watch some of those shows, because like in February, I start school. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's gonna, and I'm going like full time. Like, I think I signed up for like 18.
Oh, wow.
So.
I keep thinking of what Vanessa said. I haven't been watching movies. Like, I haven't been watching movies that I've never seen before. And I just keep buying movies and, like, not watching them. And so I thought about what Vanessa was saying, that it's, like, comfort to just watch the same thing over and over. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's why I'm doing it. I think this pandemic is, like, starting to stress me out. I was pretty okay about it at the beginning, but I think now I'm like, I keep watching How I Met Your Mother and American Dad and like these shows that I've seen like a million times, and I'm like, I just don't know why I keep hesitating to like watch a movie, because I'm like, no, I want to watch something where I know how it ends and I know it's coming.
Yeah, it's just comforting to watch. Like, I was gonna watch something yesterday or Sunday, and I was just like, I just kind of sat and played solitaire on my iPad and watched I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I just wanted to lounge. I didn't want to pay attention to anything specifically.
That's the other thing too. It gives you a chance to just kind of have it on as background noise.
Yeah, but yeah, I really need to watch those other. I'm gonna. Yeah, I'm getting close to beating this, and then once I'm done, I'm gonna probably just watch. Yeah, watch a lot of shows.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Anywho, this is my Grave Coffee Podcast, and I'm Kishan Zendi.
And I'm Ivan Ortega.
And I'm Justin Park.
So we're gonna go back in time a little bit to
the future.
To March 24th, 1874, where Eric Weiss was born in Budapest. When he was 4 years old, his mother moved him and his four brothers to Appleton, Wisconsin, where his dad was working as a rabbi. They were a Jewish family. The family was always poor, especially moving to the U.S. So when Eric reached what was back then the working age of 9, he joined the circus as a trapeze performer to support the family. And back then, he was known as Eric the Prince of Air, was his stage name. So that year, the family moved to New York City, and Eric continued to perform, but this time in vaudeville shows, which were really popular back then. That was like the thing to go see. And vaudeville are like variety shows. And he did okay, but he wasn't the most popular performer. So when he was 17, Eric and his friend Jacob Hyman created a magic act, and they decided to pay tribute to French magician Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin. And they called themselves the Brothers Houdini. And as a tribute to American magician Harry Keller, Eric started going by the name Harry Houdini.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to talk about Houdini.
Yay.
Houdini.
Yeah. So just so we don't get confused for the rest of the episode, I'm just going to call him Houdini. Not by his actual birth name. Which is, I was thinking of Harry too, but I was like, no, that's fine. So.
Hood.
That's what we'll call it. So in 1892, Houdini's father passed away, and the brothers Houdini started to tour. In 1894, Houdini married his stage assistant, Wilhelmina Beatrice Rayner, who started going by the name Bess Houdini. After this point, I don't really know what happened to Jacob, his original partner. He just kind of disappeared from the stories I read. And I also saw there was kind of like conflicting information, because I also saw that Harry didn't tour with Jacob. He toured with his brother Theodore. So I'm not really sure which one's true, which one was his like actual partner starting. In 1898, at the age of 25, Houdini was worn out from like the years of touring, and he did consider leaving the entertainment business and just getting a regular job. He was spotted just in time by a very well-known vaudeville manager named Martin Beck. So Beck watched Houdini's performance, and in his performance, one of his acts was to break out of a pair of handcuffs. So after the show, Beck approached him, which this is so weird to me, Beck approached him and gave him a pair of his handcuffs and challenged him to get out of those. Of course, it was a piece of cake for him. He got out of it right away. I just think it's weird that a stranger comes up to you and is like, use my handcuffs. And you're like, what? <Use mine. laughs> Why do you have these?
Prove you can really do it.
Yeah. Beck decided to represent him and was able to get the Houdinis higher pay for less performances. So now they were able to get paid enough on a few shows, maybe 3 shows a week, as opposed to doing these 3 shows a day, every single day. And Houdini became known for his strength, and as an escape artist, they would tie him up with rope and chains in front of large crowds. Sometimes they would chain him up and put him in a wooden crate that was sealed and then throw him in the bay, which I'm getting anxiety and claustrophobia just thinking about it. Like, I saw this crate and I'm like, no, that's a whole lot of nope. Like, you can't even stand up on this thing. And I was like, no, thank you. So... His most popular trick was called the milk can. And it was one of those large, you know, the tin ones? It kind of looks like a barrel. It's got handles. But one of those large milk cans, they would fill it to the top with water. And in front of the audience, Houdini would be handcuffed. And then they would squeeze him into the water-filled milk can. And then they would seal it with 6 padlocks. Here's the thing. I know he's like an incredible magician. He's like the best magician that's ever lived. And so that doesn't really need to be said. He doesn't need my approval. But after he was locked in the milk can, the curtains would close, like in front of the audience. And then a couple minutes later, the curtains would open and Houdini would come up behind the locked milk can. But it's like, wouldn't that just be a bunch of people helping him when the curtains are closed? Get out. Do you know what I mean? Like,
milk like, Jean.
Like, I don't know. I don't want to question it. I know. I don't want to say that he doesn't know how to do magic. But I was like, if the curtains are closing, we don't know what's happening.
We're just spoiled.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, I don't know if you guys know comedian Pete Holmes. He used to have a show after Conan.
Yeah.
Like a late show. He has a great bit in one of his albums about magic shows that he said that he went to a magic show one time. And I forgot what the magician did, but the guy sitting next to Pete Holmes was like, it's a magnet. He's like, shut up! Just let me believe! He got so mad at the guy. It's like, just shut the fuck up! Let me enjoy this! So, Houdini would also pay other magicians for their performance rights on their original tricks, and then he would one-up them. So, for example, British magician Charles Morant had a trick where he made a donkey disappear on stage, like in front of an audience. No curtains drawn or anything, just in front of an audience. So Houdini offered him the performance rights to pay for the performance rights, and he did, and then he made an elephant disappear. So he was like, I can do it better. And to this day, we do not know how he pulled that off. No magician has been able to figure it out. We actually don't know how he pulled off most of his tricks because he refused to patent them. And the reason he refused to patent them was because in order to get a patent, you have to show the details of the trick, which he didn't want to do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. He did get around the patent once with his Chinese water torture cell trick. He set up a one-act play in England. And he only had one person in the audience. And this allowed him to copyright the trick without getting a patent. Mm. So that way he had the rights to it, but he didn't have to divulge the information of what went into the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Houdini was blowing people's minds left and right doing these tricks. He was unlike any other magician or performer. There was one way, though, that you could really piss him off. And that is his tricks were so amazing that people would say he had supernatural powers. But you never want to say that to Houdini. He was very outspoken about his hatred for supernatural and spiritualism in the form of career. So now that not that he was not a spiritual guy or that he didn't believe in a higher power, but he just hated mediums and people who said they had these like supernatural powers.
Yeah.
And he was outspoken for it for a couple reasons. One is that calling what he did supernatural was an insult to his craft, because now you're saying that he's not good at his craft. He just has this unknown magical power. Yeah. And the second was that at this point in time, being a psychic and a medium was actually big money. There was a lot of them. I forgot, I should have gotten this, but there was the name of these three sisters who became really famous for doing seances. And so he just thought it was like such bullshit. He hated it. And he knows firsthand, because in the early days of his career, he worked as a medium. So he knows it's bullshit because he used to do it for money before he became a magician. Sadly, in 1913, his mother passed away and he was devastated. Him and his mother were really close. He was desperate to hear from her or to see her again. So he actually started going to seances hoping that he could find a real medium. He knew most of them were bullshit, but he was like, he still had an open mind and some hope that maybe this is real and somebody could help him. One of his good friends was Sir Arthur Doyle, who's the author most known for writing the Sherlock Holmes novels. Doyle thought that Houdini had supernatural powers, and Houdini would be like, nah, I'm just really good at this. Like, I'm just really good at my job. And Doyle, like, refused to hear it. He would always tell him, like, but Houdini never said anything to Doyle because it was his friend. So just out of respect, he would just, like, shut his mouth and not say anything. Doyle claimed that his wife was a medium and that he wanted Houdini to join them as they try to communicate with Doyle's son. Doyle's son had passed away from influenza in the early 1900s. And so he claimed that he wanted Houdini there because he believed he had supernatural powers or like some kind of aura. And so he just wanted him present in the room when they tried to communicate with his son. And so Harry, wanting to be a polite friend, agreed. So he went to their house, and in the middle of the seance, Lady Doyle claims that she's getting a message from Houdini's late mother, not from her son. And so Houdini's like, here we go. So she proceeds to write 15 pages of messages from his mother as Houdini just sat there quietly. When she's done, Lady Doyle is like, don't you want to read what your mom wrote to you? And at this point, I'm guessing he kind of took a deep breath and was like, never hit a woman, never hit a woman. But he's like, probably through gritted teeth, say that, no, he didn't care to read the letter because the letter is in English, a language his mother did not know how to speak or write. Also, in the quote unquote message, she calls him Harry, which is definitely not his birth name and definitely not the name she called him by. And so he's like, I hate you both. You suck. And I never want to see you again. And their friendship was like essentially over at that friendship point. Over. Yeah, done. So I just like, I love Houdini's pettiness, that his level was at like a 10. Because like he let her write 15 pages and was like, nah, I'm gonna let her finish her trash. Like, he knew she was writing in English. He was like, I'm gonna let her finish her bullshit and then call her out on it. Communicating with his mom became a second priority from that point on. He now made it his life's goal to debunk every medium he could meet with. He would dress up fake mustache style and go to like seances under different names. He'd wear like wigs and shit.
Oh my God.
And like tell them. And of course, from the information, from the fake information he was giving them, they were, you know, giving him all these other fake answers, which he was like, well, that's not my real name or whatever. So he went on to write several books on the tricks of mediums and seances, showing people how mediums use tricks to kind of rip you off and to take your money and to take advantage of your grief, especially with these people who are trying to communicate with like family members that have just died.
He really didn't like it.
Yeah. So he made it like his life's work. He started exposing mediums, including a 40-page illustrated pamphlet exposing Mina Marjorie Crandon, who was a really famous medium. And in this pamphlet, it's really funny because it's an illustrated pamphlet. So he like shows you step by step what she's going to do through the seance appointment and like how she's doing it. So that way, if you do go to her, if you do go to another one, you're going to like trace it and be like, oh, now she's going to do this and now she's going to do that. He also started lecturing around the country in schools, universities, and in 1926, he even testified before Congress to try and pass regulations on mediums and spiritualists. In October of that same year, he was performing and broke his ankle during a performance. His doctor begged him to rest, but Houdini went on to his next performance anyway. So this performance was in New York. And his next performance is scheduled in Montreal. So he went anyways. While in Montreal, during the daytime, he gave another lecture before his show. And then after the lecture, a young man named Jocelyn Gordon Whitehead, who was, I think he attended that school or like attended that lecture that he was giving about like the bullshit of mediums. Him and his friends went to his dressing room before his show that night and asked if he could punch him in the stomach because Houdini was also known as a strong man. Like, he performed mostly magic, but at the beginning he was, like, known as this, like, strong man, and he would do a lot of, like, strength acts. Now, there's witnesses. I've heard, like, mixed accounts, but, like, but they say that there's witnesses because two of his, of Whitehead's friends were with him. So they said that when he walked into the dressing room, he first asked Houdini if he, quote, believed in the miracles of the Bible and whether it was true that if he punches him, it would not hurt. So Houdini just kind of chuckled and said, well, my body's been through a lot. And just kind of left it at that. Like, he's like, I've done a lot of things. They've punched me. It doesn't really hurt, whatever. And without any warning, Whitehead starts punching him repeatedly in the stomach. Like, hard punches. Really. Yeah. Like, the witnesses, which are the friends, said that they were really hard blows below the belt. This is what they put it as. So he does a show that night, and on his way to the next show, he starts complaining about stomach cramps. He's like, my stomach really hurts. This is really bad. And he was not known, his wife was kind of concerned because he was not known to complain about, like, anything. Like, he broke his damn ankle and was like, nah, let's keep moving. Like, he didn't even go to the doctor. He didn't wrap it, nothing. So she was kind of concerned when he started complaining about stomach cramps. A doctor came to check on him at the theater. Houdini, at this point, had a fever of 104. And the doctor was like, you for sure have appendicitis. And if you don't go to the hospital right now, you're going to die. Like, you're legit going to die soon. And like the badass artist that he is, Houdini said, quote, I'll do this show if it's my last. And went on to perform with 104 fever, a broken ankle, and appendicitis. He actually got through the entire show. And then afterwards, his wife was like, hey, honey, how about we make a quick stop at the hospital before we go on to your next show, yeah? And so she convinced him to. He got emergency surgery. It turns out that his appendix had burst. And a couple days later, he had a follow-up surgery. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough. And on Halloween of 1926, Harry Houdini passed away from sepsis. He was 52 years old.
Dang.
There's a lot of theories. Like, people think that it's actually an unsolved murder. There's a lot of theories that he was, like, poisoned or whatever. But I don't really think they hold up. Because so one of the theories was that guy was sent to his dressing room to, like, kill him by punching him. But medical professionals have said that appendicitis caused by external damage is very rare. And so they're like, no, he couldn't have, like, burst his appendix by punching him. So they think he probably had appendicitis and it was just a coincidence that this guy happened to punch him. Other people said that he was poisoned in the hospital. Because, like, anybody could just walk in at that time or whatever.
Yeah.
And he did piss, like, a lot of people off with his seance bullshit thing, you know? So people are like, oh, he was poisoned. But then again, it's like, appendicitis is pretty fucking serious. Yeah. Like, if you don't treat that quickly, you could die. So I don't know. I don't really think it holds up. I think that's what he died from. So even though he made it his life's work to debunk spiritualism, he was still he was considered an open-minded guy. So he made a deal with Bess, his wife, that if either of them died, they would pass on a secret message. Only the two of them knew what this message was. Bess held seances every Halloween for the next 2 years, and all of them were unsuccessful in breaking the code. So to her dying day, she was like, nah, it's not real. He was right.
Yeah.
Bess died from a heart attack on February 11th, 1943. She was 67 years old. Sadly, her family refused to bury her next to her husband in the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Machpelah Cemetery in Queens, New York. They refused to bury her with her husband because she was a Roman Catholic and he was a Jew. And so they buried her at the Gate of Heaven Cemetery in Hawthorne, New York.
That's stupid.
I know. Yeah, Isn't that so sad? Like, they were able to get past... You know, they were obviously very happily married with even having different religions. And it's, like, so sad that they wouldn't bury them together. So that's it. That's the story of Harry Houdini. And thank you, as always, to Wikipedia, BuzzFeed Unsolved, and Drunk History.
Unsolved. Nice. I haven't seen episode of Unsolved in a while.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of sad. He was young.
Yeah.
Harry Houdini.
That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to me that they still don't know how he did his tricks. Especially now that there's, you know, we have like the Magic Castle and there's people who do this for a living and still can't figure it out. I'm like, that's yeah. not. So I remember, do you guys remember a show on Fox that would like expose the secrets of magicians? Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently that guy.
What was that called?
Like a lot of people wanted to kill him and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I had read something that he would get threats from like, magicians.
Whoa.
Basically saying like, because he was exposing a lot of stuff.
Yeah. My uncle, we always used to watch that show, and my uncle would get so mad. He's an engineer, and he's like the most brilliant man I know. Like, he's so smart and he's really curious, so he constantly has these different hobbies where he's like doing all this stuff. And he reminds me of Mike. Of your friend Mike.
Yeah.
He reminds me of him. Like, he's constantly doing these, like, he'll find a hobby and he gets like obsessed with it and he's to figure it out and he needs to know how to do it. And he would get so pissed when we watch that show because at that point his hobby was like magic. Like magic tricks. And he's like, it's so stupid. Like, he's like, just enjoy the act. Like, just enjoy what they're doing. Like, why do you have to figure it out? Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently it was like an actual magician. So that was like revealing the secrets or whatever.
That's messed up because you gotta like take an oath and shit.
Yeah.
Can you go in the magic castle?
That's messed up.
Or do you have to be like invited?
I don't know.
I think I heard that you have to be like invited, that it's like an insider's club type thing.
It's like the Freemasons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, Houdini was a Freemason. I forgot to bring that up.
Of course he was.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Harry Houdini.
If you guys haven't seen the Drunk History episode, it's really funny. It has Ken... Oh my god, why am I blanking out his name? From Children's Hospital. Anyways, it's really funny. Yeah, please watch it. And I think Alfred Molina plays Doyle, which is really cool. Yeah, it's a really funny episode. It's really good. But yeah, so anyways, where can they find us?
Nice.
You can find us on Instagram at microwavecoffeepodcast or email us at microwavecoffeepodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you guys. Go look at some magic tricks. Enjoy your day. Stay inside.
Stay home.
stay home, please.
Play chess.
For the love of God. Yeah, play chess. Learn how
By
to
the
play
way, I'm gonna buy a chess set. I'm sure that movie, that show has since.
Oh yeah.
Ramped up chess board sales, but
yeah. If you can't find one, let me know and you can just borrow mine because I haven't used it, even though I said I would after that show.
Yours is too nice. I don't want to touch it.
is it really nice. A wood board or a glass board?
Wood.
Okay.
Can one of you guys answer this for me? What is the name of the game that's on the inside that has like the triangles?
Backgammon.
Backgammon. Yeah.
Is that backgammon?
Yeah,
it's front gammon.
I mean,
if it's face up.
I've heard that name before, and every Kurdish man I know plays that game, and I never knew the name of it. Like, I've heard that name, but I didn't know that that was a game.
Yeah, and
maybe I learned to play that.
You have like little circles or something.
Yeah, they look like checker pieces.
Yeah, right? That's backgammon.
Yeah, that's backgammon.
Oh, okay, cool. Maybe I'll learn backgammon. Anyhow. All right, thank you guys.
Yep.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?